articles for numerous publications in Canada. I spoke with Pasha about this political moment in Canada, the reality of a rising extreme right politics, how that intersects with the liberal center that has been speaking progressive language in many respects over recent years. But when analysis comes down, looking at their policies, we don't see that language matched by the policies of successive liberal governments in terms of impacts on working people's lives. And so that political space between language, rhetoric, and policy is being exploited by the right. We talk about this. I think this is an important conversation. What does that mean for organizers, progressives, progressive writers? So it was really a pleasure to speak with Pasha about this political moment in Canada today. And here is our conversation. So Pasha, your essays and writing sort of visit this intersection of, you know, personal reflection, societal commentary. And you wrote this piece that I read recently. We're speaking in 2025, but it was about an event in 2010 in Toronto, which was this summit of the G20, and thinking about the protests that happened. And you were sort of putting forth this idea that missing from the mainstream conversation was that there probably is something relevant and meaningful to consider in terms of the position and ideas that of corporate critique of inequality that the Black Bloc group, which is the direct action kind of components of those protests, were putting forth. I read this article and I was thinking about this time, and you know, as we're currently dealing with the rise of Poilievre and the Conservative Party, even though they didn't win the last election, they definitely were able to mobilize a lot of support. So I was thinking just to ask you, kind of in this current context, why thinking about that time when Harper was in power is kind of important to think about, to reflect on, and any sort of parallels or like lessons or ideas that you think we should consider in this current moment when the Conservatives have been able to sort of create some sort of political coalition in Canada. I think it's important to talk about this. But so maybe any reflections on that, and if you could just first start by introducing yourself for our listeners. Thank you.
My name is Pasha. I'm a writer of fiction primarily. I've published 3 books of I hesitate to call them poems because I'm not really a poet, but I try. I do a lot of nonfiction writing as well, or at least I used to. And these days I teach full-time at York University in the undergraduate program and also with some graduate students. And yeah, I mean, it was funny when you got in touch. I hadn't thought about that piece in a very long time. And then it started to kind of creep back into my brain recently, sort of thinking about ways in which I, as a writer, can participate in this conversation and be useful. And at the time, you know, that piece was, it was an attempt to write propaganda. I'll be like very honest. I was trying to use like the language of a kind of, you know, there are lines in that piece that make me cringe, but I was trying to use the language of a kind of like status quo, centrist, maybe center left, you know, Canadian citizen who might read The Walrus, who would think of, you know, anarchy, anarchism, Black Bloc, like as terrorism. And, you know, what I was trying to do is just be like, no, like they are articulating things that you are thinking. They're just using different strategies outside of this mainstream political apparatus that is fundamentally corrupt, broken, useless, I think, in many ways, and totally compromised by, you know, free market capitalism, political donation, like all kinds of like corporate malfeasance that's found its way into our politics. And I struggle a little bit with how the left has become preoccupied with symbols and symbolism. And I think that's something that I sort of maintain, that the sort of direct action when it happens in a symbolic way, like the smashing of a Starbucks or something, where there's like, you know, some 17-year-old kid making minimum wage cowering behind the counter. You know, like I struggle a little. Like, I understand the rage. I understand the need to do something when one feels like completely powerless. But and I think these feelings have all been kind of returning to me. It's like, so what do we do? Like, what is to be done in this moment, like this moment of crisis, in which I think a lot of center-left Canadians feel like, you know, I feel like there's a sentiment that we've averted it, right? Like with this election of Mark Carney, that, oh, don't worry, you know, the far right has kind of gone away in Canada. We're this bastion of, you know, sanity or whatever. And I find that thinking like deeply sinister. I mean, we tend to be one election cycle behind the States anyway. So, I mean, I think we can sort of think of Carney as kind of our Joe Biden, right? Like, it's like while the far right gathers momentum, consolidates, like we have reverted to this, you know, status quo that is not working, right? Like, it's not working for, I think, most people. And it's certainly like not working for the planet. So it, you know, even before you got in touch with me about the piece, it was sort of like I was kind of returning to these thoughts and thinking about ways to kind of address them in writing and, yeah, ways that I can be like useful as someone who, you know, types sentences. I don't know if I can be useful in that way. Like, I think that there are people like, you know, Naomi Klein, and I mean, there are so many, Arundhati Roy, you know, so many incredible public figures who are writing brilliantly about this stuff. So yeah, just trying to like figure out what my position, I mean, I know my position, but I mean my position as far as a writer in relation to this stuff. So yeah, I was kind of going back to that idea of like my attempt to write a piece of propaganda, you know, anarchist propaganda in a mainstream publication. And that piece still makes me cringe a little bit, but, you know, the intentions were good. I'm not that good at that kind of writing. So it's a bit of a struggle. So yeah, I don't know, like, yes, I think this stuff is, we need to be continuously talking about it, and not just spiraling around this idea of, you know, calling out fascism, but I think calling out the status quo and the Liberal Party for, you know, maintaining, you know, publicly, oh, you know, great, they're going to recognize the Palestinian state, but they, you know, there's still tons of arms going from Canada directly to the IDF. So, you know, we're not doing great. I think we're complicit in a lot of global evil still. And what happened with the NDP was dismaying. I hope it's going to spur some kind of groundswell in that party that will, you know, tilt the party back to the left, because I think it's been moving centrist as everything sort of tilts to the right.
So let's zero in on maybe a few different things that you highlighted. We could just talk a bit more about what you highlighted, which was this idea that the sort of neoliberal center can't be maintained, right? And I think a lot of people are struggling with this, right? Because you have the sort of symbolism of the very accurate intersectional critiques, at least in my opinion, of you know, probably tens of thousands of people between, you know, 20 years old and 45 years old, who have largely not participated in the political system. And often these folks are really pretty sharp when it comes to sort of understanding the nuance of neoliberal politics and the challenges of and the hypocritical points that we face. I do think that talking about that a little bit more is important, right? Because you talked about this feeling that a crisis was averted. So maybe we could just look into that a bit more. Why do you feel like talking about the sort of contradictions of this moment with, you know, the Liberals in power and Carney and sort of the rising extreme right that is aligned with the Conservative Party? Just speak about this a bit more and why trying to like have more conversations about this is important.
Yeah, I mean, a really kind of an analogy I would cringe at if a student wrote it in one of my classes is like, I mean, if you imagine our politic as a kind of boat, and the whole there's all this weight on the right, we're not going to steady the ship by sitting in the middle, right? Like it's got to swing to the left. I mean, otherwise we're going to be flooded with this tide of shit. It's difficult to have these conversations. I mean, I don't know if I should be saying this, but I just wrote a piece for the Globe and Mail. It was sort of nominally about Weird Al Yankovic. But what I wanted to talk about was like absurdism as a political strategy, and as a political strategy that has traditionally been used by artists to like disarm fascism. It's just like when sense is no longer the common ground for political conversation, when things like, you know, basic human rights, empirical fact, and truth no longer are the ways in which we relate to one another across the political spectrum. It's like, how do you engage with that, right? And I like how artists, absurdist artists, Dadaists, surrealists, you know, respond, you know, have this aestheticized politic that is like, okay, you know, nothing makes sense. Here we are going to completely disrupt all the conventions of what we are supposed to be doing to respond to that. So you know, it's a stretch to position Weird Al as a political figure, but I wanted to talk about the stuff that we're talking about, like this kind of, this moment that we're in and the ineffectualness of, you know, a centrist neoliberal politic that is trying to engage with that in good faith, right? Like, it's like the presidential debates were, I mean, like a catastrophe. It was like the most not, and that was where, you know, Weird Al sort of, the only political thing he's ever done is remix two of the presidential debates into original songs. Like, he stays away from politics entirely. So when there's this inherent absurdism to what's happening in the mainstream political sphere, like, I don't know how we engage with it other than to try and like completely disrupt it, right? To reveal this inherent nonsense of what's happening in this illusion of, you know, logic and causality and all these things that are no longer true. So, the Globe cut out all the stuff to do with Carney. I had a two paragraphs talking about, you know, how centrist politics are incapable of, you know, meeting this stuff, because they're sort of, you know, they're using a system that is inherently broken, right? Like that, and that I think very few people have faith in anymore, which, you know, results in voter apathy on one side and then this tilt to like, you know, populist extremism on the right. So, I find it, you know, I approached this piece thinking like I was going to write something political, and I was like, oh, this is the Globe and Mail, right? Like they will not, rattle the cage at all. They're not interested in those kinds of conversations. So I was like, so what are the venues where, because I think we do need to reach that audience, right? Like that, you know, if there's a kind of central political identity to Canada, I would like to think that it's like center left, right? Maybe that's optimistic, you know, but I, you know, in the things that we cherish about this country as Canadians, you know, and I don't mean this in like a nationalistic kind of way, but I mean, I do like that I can go to the hospital and that I don't have to pay money and I don't have to deal with private insurers. And there are many things about this country that I think the foundation of which are based in leftist principles, right? Like the things that make us a country are not far off from the things that make a lot of the Scandinavian countries, you know, or what they used to be, these kind of like, you know, socialist projects. So it's like, if these things are important to people who are voting liberal, can we have a conversation with those people that's like, yeah, but is this party, does this party represent those things at all anymore? Or is it just another arm of big business? And, you know, increasingly like the militarization of that big business and, you know, big business being profiting off of genocide. So, I think for me as a writer who is, you know, interested in kind of like alternative media and also interested in engaging people like my parents, who are like lifelong NDP voters, but I think, you know, like many people of their generation, just feel like, you know, the center is what should and will hold. And, you know, as you're saying, it's like it isn't, you know, it is falling apart. So, yeah, I just struggle a little bit, like trying to figure out where to have these conversations and how in Canada, so that the people who need to hear these things and we need to engage in good faith conversations and listen are important. And I'm not talking about like this kind of like Ian Williams bullshit. We need to have conversations with people on the far right. It's like, no, fuck the far right. Like, I don't want to talk to a racist. No. I have no interest in those conversations. But I do think that there is a large contingent of people in this country who have become complacent. And I feel like they probably actually don't want to be, right? Like, they do care about climate change. And they do care that we aren't starving children to death in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, you know? So, yeah.
You mentioned political satire and this piece that I believe will come out soon. Yeah, so this piece that you've written, Pasha, we're talking in the end of July 2025, will come out in the Globe and Mail at some point soon. You mentioned Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, an interesting example from another period of fascism, which you might reference in the piece, in a Western reference, would be Charlie Chaplin, right? Like, as somebody who kind of was actually very front political often in sort of challenging the hypocrisy of fascists in the 1920s. It's an interesting reference. But fascism requires the exploitation of contradictions often, right? And that's an interesting, a lot of what you said is really important to think about. I would just zero in again on sort of, I think what you identified is absolutely correct, that tons of folks identify with certain progressive ideals that they inherently believe is part of the Canadian project, right? Like on a sort of mental landscape. The contradiction now comes when you actually try to match that up with liberal policy, right? And it's that gap that the extreme right is exploiting, right? So thank you for outlining that. I think that, you present a lot of important kind of questions that we face right now, right? And I appreciate this conversation because I think it's very important that we have this conversation more broadly. As a writer, I think that there's certain sort of challenges that the left faces that, you know, we haven't found ways to address, right? Like, and one of them, I'd say, broadly speaking, from our generation has been, how do we build power, right? How do we build infrastructure, right? And you mentioned Naomi Klein. She said something once that I really appreciated when she was talking about the fact that because of the history of the Soviet Union and repression, the sort of slogan name of communism and socialism have paid for crimes that have been associated to those words. Obviously what ended up happening in the Soviet Union doesn't match the idea of communism, but the sort of reference point has paid for that crime in the Western context. Capitalism has never paid for its crimes inherently on a structural level. So I would just ask you a bit as a writer about sort of this moment and why you are feeling motivated to write about this moment, right? And the fact that, you know, you did talk about the sort of inherent brokenness of the neoliberal center and the Liberal Party. Just zeroing in on that more and sort of any additional thoughts. I'm sure you're talking with friends about it. And I feel like across Quebec and Canada, tons of people are talking about this, but we don't really have the form to sort of figure out what is the political alternative, right? Which is kind of this awkward moment. And I think naming that's kind of important.
In terms of, you know, being a writer and thinking about art and how art can function in response to this, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, you mentioned Charlie Chaplin, who's a terrific satirist. And in this piece about Weird Al, I was sort of thinking and writing about satire and the role of satire and how increasingly, you know, this thing that fascism is able to do is disarm satire, where if you look at The Onion now, it's fairly scathing, but the headlines are basically just a grotesque extrapolation of stuff that's already happening, right? Like, so satire becomes, it almost becomes reportage. It's like it sort of loses its teeth a little bit as a tool. I mean, this is the thing that fascism does, right? Like, it disarms all our normal defenses. And so I'm less interested in satire and the role of satire, because I think satire often is just, it's comforting people like me and you. I mean, I love reading The Onion, right? And The Beaverton, and like good satire, like it's fun, like it's funny, it's dark, it's like, oh wow, they went there kind of thing. But I don't know if it has utility. I don't even know if it's supposed to have utility, but I don't think it's doing any kind of like, I don't think it's doing any sort of work toward, you know, articulating something that isn't already obvious, right? And I think it just becomes more and more obvious the closer it gets to just saying what's actually happening. I mean, I guess the difference in the States is that, you know, most mainstream media is afraid to even say what's happening. So, The Onion is now becoming journalism, you know, slightly skewed journalism, but only slightly. So, yeah, like in terms of the role of artists and what we can do, you know, I do think that there's a place for just art providing a refuge for folks who are feeling completely alienated, bewildered, dehumanized, just as, you know, to use The Onion, like to go to a website, to read something, just be like, okay, there are still people like me who feel this way. And I think that there's a kind of inherent utility in that. I don't know if it has like proactive utility. It's just like something to make us feel like we're not drowning all the time. And I think, you know, that is one of the rules of art anyway, right? Is to like make people feel seen, to make people feel less alone. So I think, you know, art will continue to do that. And I think a lot of artists are providing that to people in all kinds of ways, right? Like, I think Weird Al provides it in that he can get 15,000 people, into the Budweiser Stage Amphitheater in Toronto, who may have wildly different political views, and all of us are kind of like dancing and singing along and laughing and having a nice time. You know what I mean? And there's like, that's not going to change anything. And I worry a little bit that if that's all we have, that it sort of furthers this complacency. But I do think that those moments are valuable. And I do think it is one thing that artists can provide to people. I hesitate a little bit to like suggest that artists have a duty to engage politically. Like, I'm feeling, you know, I can write novels that engage with these questions. I don't know that they achieve anything, and I don't know if novels are supposed to achieve anything. But I think that those of us who are able and have the privilege to like participate in political movements should, you know, like I just, yesterday, signed up for this kind of like it's basically a lobby group. I was like, okay, I can write, I can, you know, speak, I can participate in this stuff outside of writing as well, right? Like, and I think that I think that sort of stuff is becoming increasingly significant to me, as just like, okay, like I will, you know, I make a pretty good salary now as a university professor. It's like a new thing to me, but I can donate money to all kinds of causes. You know what I mean? Like in a way that I couldn't previously, and I couldn't just as like when I was just an artist. So yeah, I don't know. As far as, you know, writing, I will try to write about this stuff. I don't know that it's the writing of these things is going to change much, because so many people who are better nonfiction writers than me are writing about this. Like, you know, we keep talking about Naomi Klein, but there are so many, like, you know, ZTO and Medi, and like, you know, there are so many outlets now that are outside the mainstream that are, you know, reporting on this stuff really well. From all kinds of perspectives, like, you know, Ian Urbina and the Outlaw Ocean Project is doing an incredible job on reporting on like corporate malfeasance on the high seas, right? Like, and he's getting pieces in the New Yorker now, and I mean he was in New York Times. So, me, you know, Hamilton, Ontario, fiction writer, I'm not going to be spearheading the revolution, but I will march alongside those who are. You know what I mean? I don't know. I continue to try to feel like art has a place in this. I'm just not exactly sure what the place is.
I do think that writing in this moment and sort of addressing the open questions that exist around the sort of contradictions of the neoliberal center is something that's extremely important. I mean, I got in touch with you about this piece you wrote on the G20, which inherently was looking at the fundamental critiques of neoliberal economics that the protesters in Toronto in 2010, when Harper was in power under the Conservatives in Canada, were addressing. And until now, there's been a continuity of that power, the sort of neoliberal center, which is, of course, rooted in, you know, the colonial infrastructure launched out of Western Europe. These questions and conversations about how, in, you know, an actual progressive movement can navigate the contradictions of that neoliberal center and build power will happen through conversation and actually naming and talking about these things. So thank you so much, Pasha, for taking the time to talk today.
For sure. Thanks so much, Stefan.
That was a conversation with Pasha Mala, an author and educator based in Toronto, working at York University, a commentator publishing in various key magazines and newspapers in Canada. I spoke with Pasha about this political moment at this time in Canada and sort of the importance of progressives coming to terms with what is taking place with a rising conservative right. I think this is an insightful and important voice that Pasha offers. So thank you so much for tuning in, and to Pasha for being on the program. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. I'm Stefan Christoph. I'd also encourage you to look us up as a podcast. Just search Free City Radio on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll speak to you next week.
CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.